Mark Tallman with the Kansas Association of School Boards. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Nick.
All right, let's talk a little bit. You had a blog post about a week ago talking about enrollment in Kansas, speaking generally, the number of school-age children, and I just thought there were some interesting numbers there, especially as you widen out to the state as a whole.
Yeah, I did that because, well, at least since, you know, the COVID pandemic, there's been a lot of attention to what's happening in public school enrollment in Kansas and other states. Questions about, you know, is enrollment going up, down? What are some of the reasons? Issues about whether people are moving away from public education to other options, homeschooling, private schools, et cetera. So I wanted to just take a little bit of time to look at some historical data on what's really happening. A couple things I found rather surprising. I don't know whether you did or not. One that I really wasn't aware of is that if you use population estimates, and these are only estimates, but it's the best data we have from the U.S. Census, the school-age population in Kansas has actually been dropping, really over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, and the preschool-age population, which, of course, you know, affects the school-age population, has been dropping even more rapidly. So one of the things to start by noting is, based on this data, there's simply fewer school-age kids in the state. And the second thing is, and I started with data that went back to about 2010 till right up to 2020 and 2021, that area when the COVID pandemic hit, public school enrollment was actually growing at least a little bit and was basically taking a larger share of that population. In other words, it would appear that more kids are actually moving into the public schools than out of them. Well, when COVID hit, one of the things we saw was that there was a big spike in students that were not attending public schools or accredited private schools. So whether that means, you know, homeschooling, non-accredited private school offerings, or whatever was going on, that increased. What's happened since then is we appear to be about back where we were about 10 years ago in terms of kind of the share of the school-age population between public and private schools. Now, public school enrollment was down again this year, and it is down from that pre-COVID peak, and that may continue just because of school-age population. And certainly, there has been, over the last 4 or 5 years, an increase in students that are not in either public schools or accredited private schools, but that doesn't seem to be really growing since COVID. It grew at the time of COVID, and we haven't fully gone back to where we were, but there doesn't appear to be an ongoing increase in those other options. Final thing I guess I'll note and see what you want to talk about is that accredited private school enrollment. In other words, these are accredited private schools, which in Kansas are mostly the Catholic schools and Lutheran schools that choose to be accredited, had actually a long-term decline in their population going really back to about 2020, almost a quarter of a century of decline. That appears around COVID to have somewhat stabilized, and that may be partly because the state has expanded its aid programs for what are often called vouchers, or systems that provide some assistance for students in private schools with state support. As that program has grown, it hasn't really increased private school enrollment a large amount, but it does seem to have stopped the decline that had been going on. At least that's what's happened over the last several years.
Okay, so the hard part about this is it looks like there's going to be a dip in enrollment everywhere, at least, and I can't say everywhere individually, but everywhere collectively is a better way of putting that.
Right.
And between that and the rural to urban migration that we started to see over the last couple of decades, there are areas in Kansas that had enough kids to support their own school that if the trends continue, may not. Is is the legislature, I mean, you're not doing the day-to-day anymore, but is the legislature even talking about that as an issue when they discuss the future school funding formula that's going to be due here in 2027?
You know, I've not heard a lot of discussion on this long-term trend. One thing the legislature is looking at is changing the way students are counted for budgets, which right now is always based on the prior year or the year before that enrollment, meaning your budget is really set on your enrollment from a year or two before, to letting districts either use the current year or the prior year, but not going two back. That would be helpful to districts that are growing, and there are some that are continuing to grow. It wouldn't be as helpful to districts in a longer-term decline. They may face budget cuts faster. Now, of course, they also have fewer students to educate, but one of the challenges that many schools face is it's often harder to cut your expenses as fast as it is to respond to student enrollments. Let me give you an example most people will be aware of. You just take a typical class of, say, 15 students. You lose one child. Under our formula, there'd be fewer dollars coming in, but you can't get rid of a teacher. You can't stop operating that. Most of your expenses are going to be the same unless you have a larger change. Now, budgets are very dynamic. There's other things that districts can do, but that's why declining enrollment, at least in the short term, can be a real challenge. And many districts, as you say, that very much want to keep their schools alive may have challenges if their population base just continues to shrink. At a minimum, they may have to think about ways to operate differently. However, one thing that everyone hates to do, and that seems to include a lot of legislators, is to close a school. In other words, you know, we want efficient operations, et cetera, but no one likes to lose their school. And in fact, we've seen in recent years when school boards have tried to close a school, that community or that particular school is often very upset and will go to their legislature and say, you know, frankly, we're being picked on. We're going to lose our school, the lifeblood of our town or our community or our neighborhood. And these are very difficult decisions that school boards and others are going to be faced with.
And Mark, we've talked about declining enrollment, and that's true across the state. But even the state's largest school district, Wichita 259, had to make some tough decisions and close some buildings here, or at least they're planning to close some buildings at the end of the year as a result of lower budget numbers, which I'm going to guess have at least something to do with declining enrollment in that district.
That's more than likely the case, because our system, although it's kind of complicated and, you know, it depends, there's different years that you look like, but overall, your budget is really determined by your enrollment and the type of kids you have with that enrollment. I guess the point that I'm wanting to make is it's important to understand that much of what's happening on the enrollment landscape is really being dictated by changes in the school age population. Some of it may have to do with different family choices around private schools, homeschools, or whatever. That's a role, unquestionably, but to a large extent, these issues are not happening because of a shift away from public education. They're happening simply because people are having fewer kids. People may be moving out of the state at different rates of other states. And this was predicted. I mean, for a long time, it's been assumed that not just in Kansas, but in many states, we'll have this decline. But as you alluded to before the break, one of the issues is how are districts and how is the state going to respond to these changes?
Well, and so let's see. Yeah, they do mention on the USD 259 website enrollment declines as part of it, but also they talk about the loss of ESSER funding and that they had underutilization of facilities. In other words, they just don't have enough kids in the right neighborhoods and those kinds of things, and that's why some of those buildings were closing. I know that Hutchinson USD 308 is going through a facilities study right now to try to figure out how best to use the facilities facilities that they have in future years as they're dealing with enrollment declines in this district too. And so it's not necessarily even that buildings will go away. They just may be used for different things. As an example, when my kids started at a small elementary school in Topeka, one of the smaller ones in the USD 501 district, and then they built a brand new elementary, and Jardine Elementary is one of the largest elementaries in the state, and they moved to that new building, but the building they were in before is now a pre-K center. So it's not like necessarily, even when these enrollment trends change, that means buildings are going to, you know, see the wrecking ball. They're just going to use them differently.
And that's right. And it's also important to understand within the school enrollment, we have had, for example, over the last 10 to 20 years, significant increases in moving to all-day kindergarten and preschool enrollment, as you talked about, didn't used to be there in the past. Despite enrollment declining, we continue to see record numbers of students with disabilities, special education kids, who may need different facilities or more room. We've seen increases in the number of students in career tech ed programs, which may take different types of facilities. So you're entirely right. How a district uses its facilities and what it needs will change. And even as we've seen now for the last several years, a decline in overall enrollment numbers, the numbers of kids who typically have extra and special needs has continued to increase for a lot of reasons.
And those kids, though they are weighted differently in the formula, I still don't feel like schools make a profit on kids with additional needs. It certainly doesn't seem that way based on the weightings.
Well, I think you can just look at the fact that virtually all districts are transferring dollars from their general operating funds into those special programs. So, yes, there's special education state aid, but districts are transferring, you know, now literally hundreds of billions of dollars from general operations to support those programs. Same is true with at-risk programs. Same is true of bilingual programs. The weighting factor alone apparently doesn't cover all the costs because districts have to supplement their state aid out of their general revenues.
Again, we've been talking to Mark Tallman with the Kansas Association of School Boards. You can read his blog at kasb.org. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.